Hello there. I'm Bruce Campbell, and I wrote, directed, starred in, and was one of the producers of this movie, Man with a Screaming Brain, and I have a friend here with me today.
I'm David Goodman, and I was Bruce Campbell's partner on The Screaming Brain. I wrote it with him and co-produced it with him.
There you go. This film was shot summer of 2004 in the beautiful city of Sofia, Bulgaria. This is Tamara Gorski, who I worked with back in the Hercules and Xena days when I directed some of those episodes. She's acting in the scene with Jonas Talkington, who is the luckiest man in all of Bulgaria.
And why is that, Bruce?
Well, he used to work for the Peace Corps not long before getting into movies, was not really an actor, and found a great need for actors, and has been in about 18 movies in a year and a half. So this guy's kicking all of our butts. So for all of you actors out there, get yourself to Bulgaria or Romania if you want to work, because that's where all the movies are being made now.
And possibly Prague.
This scene was added at the beginning. It really was meant to play deeper into the movie. We put it here to add a little bit of a zinger to the opening and establish that this woman is, in fact, as you can see here, a little crazy. And here we have a pretty good view of Sofia. It's actually between two mountains. It's in a nice valley. This was a fairly unpolluted day. And
I will say that Sofia has weather remarkably similar to Los Angeles. A lot of smog.
Yeah, plenty of smog. It's from a local brick factory that is clogging up the valley. This little sequence here, shot at the local airport, the nice thing about Bulgaria was that there was plenty of unused places because of the fall of communism, being a former communist country. And this entire airport terminal was completely vacant. So it was great. It was a living set that we could just add cars and people and posters and stuff. And here's my favorite bit. You know, the assistant directors, they help you block in the scene and fill it in. Our assistant director, Joel, who's a great guy, he put this Yahoo with a sandwich behind me in this stupid bright green vest. And he's got like a fishing hat on. I don't know what the hell that is all about, but, you know.
Yeah, why is that there?
Yeah, you got to, but in Bulgaria, why not? Maybe so.
In fact, this airport was the original airport.
And then they moved it to a new terminal.
Right. They basically built one right next door to it.
Hello, sir.
And the Steadicam operator here, since you'll see a lot of Steadicam in the movie, is an Italian boy named Sasha. He's a nice guy.
We imported him.
Nice, strong boy. All the women loved Sasha. Big, strong Italian boy. This is Vladimir. He was in a movie also that I was in previous to Screaming Brain. I made a film called Alien Apocalypse just before this movie. I did two movies back-to-back in Bulgaria. And this guy played Bob the Fisherman.
And how did he audition for this part, Bruce?
Well, he auditioned by me working with him in Alien Apocalypse. I managed to cherry-pick a bunch of actors from my buddy Josh Becker's movie, and I'm very glad that he went first so I could check these guys out. But we weren't actually even thinking of him originally, Dave. As you remember, we auditioned a bunch of guys. We actually had picked a completely different guy.
Who is in the movie, mind you?
Who is in the movie, which will remain nameless. But we were so fortunate to get this guy because we really found out during the course of this movie what an actor he was. You know, he was really into sort of dyeing his hair and getting a completely different look, getting a gold tooth. And this whole sequence is really patterned after what life is like in Bulgaria. The cab drivers, they smoke without asking. They don't care if you don't like them to smoke. They turn up their chowgum music. They decorate their cab strains. There's no seat belts. They don't run a meter. They don't speak English. So, and some of the guys I noticed had these ridiculous track suits on with lots of jewelry. So I just looked around and patterned it. Now, what's funny is that here we are playing Americans in Bulgaria, yet all of our costumes come from Bulgaria. So I had to go with the costume designer to downtown Sofia and look around for a suit that looked American, like a rich American suit. And as a result, I kind of wound up with like a 70s Robert Goulet sort of look. You got me. Now, this is the great Ted Raimi, of course. This is an interesting location. What we did is we found a military complex
that had been basically closed.
Yeah, completely closed since communism. They had trees growing in the parking lot, for example. And it was you couldn't really tell what was there. There were tons of buildings. It was a big enclosed compound. And what we did is we brought in a bunch of folks and cleared things out and discovered buildings, alleys, parking lots. We manufactured streets. We painted buildings. And what we did essentially is made it into our own back lot. And this particular interior set, it's a big cavernous place, but it used to be an auditorium.
Right.
So on the ceiling were these great sound baffles. And I'll interrupt myself for a second to introduce the great Stacy Keach, which, of course, was a great, great benefit in getting him in this movie, you know, to add legitimacy. Because, you know, Ted Raimi...
He was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm always going to use Ted in probably anything I make, hopefully. And the hope was that Ted and Stacy Keach could not only get along, but would have some sort of chemistry. And it turns out that they in fact, did get along. And
yeah, they got along famously, actually.
They did.
Yeah.
And now I'll finish my auditorium story. It allowed for the acoustics in this giant room to actually be excellent. And we were concerned about that because Stacy Keach is a great American actor and we don't want to have him sitting in a sound recording booth re-recording all of his lines later in case we had crappy sound. So we were fortunate on two fronts. Our sound guy, Ivo, was a Bulgarian man, completely concerned about sound all the time, was very worried all the time. He had a very worried look. And he did an excellent job and we lucked out in a couple of these locations where it sounded good inside, where normally in a big room it would sound terrible. This is more of the sort of the standard gags that David and I experienced every day in Sofia.
Excuse me. Yeah.
You know, that there are no buckles for your seatbelts, and so I just decided to write it into the end of the script.
Right.
And the driving is fairly unbelievable in Bulgaria, and so this is just a takeoff. I mean, this sequence is ridiculous, but it's not that ridiculous. I mean, I saw a car full of gypsies going up the wrong way on an exit ramp on a highway.
And they didn't think twice about it.
No, they're hanging out of the car, and you saw these bizarre Soviet SUVs. You saw these little teeny cars, and we patterned that so the main car of the bad girl, Totoya, is a car that David and I could push over if we tried.
Right, right.
Now, this is the beautiful main cathedral.
It's the Nevsky Cathedral. It's 500 years old.
Yeah, and here we are to desecrate it in this movie. Thematically, the idea here is that the vehicles are generally, everything is moving left to right because it's a very friendly way. That's how we read. Your eyes are very accustomed to that.
Right.
Later on in the movie, you'll find a whole sequence where it will then turn and everything will move right to left because it's more disturbing, and I'll point that out later as we go. One thing we had to decide here, there's a lot of dialogue in a moving vehicle early on, establishing the characters, and we had a choice of doing what they, you know, call a car mount, where you actually have a real car, you mount the camera to the car, and you drive down a real road. I was terrified because of the technical aspects of it. In Bulgaria, you can only get certain bits of equipment. And so we decided, we made an executive decision to do it all in a studio, and you can see the moving mirrors. They have two mirrors on each side. The director of photography, David Wirth, was a very, very good DP, very simple DP, director of photography, and he developed a system whereby the mirrors would move at different speeds and from different directions, and then they would jiggle the car slightly, and then we had the camera constantly moving back and forth just ever so slightly and rocking to give us that the look of a moving vehicle. Unfortunately, I think it worked because otherwise the dialogue would have sounded potentially terrible. And actors get very self-conscious about having to actually drive
right.
and act at the same time. Now all we had to do was act.
Right.
And I think, you know, there's a 10% bogus factor to it, but I think it's worth it because...
it's cut well, though. It's mixed up well.
I think so. Now, this was a cool old factory that we happened to see off the highway. I kept seeing it going to location for Alien Apocalypse. I kept going, what is that cool building? And so they said it was some abandoned factory, like many other things there. And so we got that as the exterior of this lab, just a cool brick building. What they did here, George, the production designer, the idea was to break the laboratory into chunks, into quadrants. That up here, which is in fact on the main stage, this being an auditorium, this was up on a big wooden stage, so it had a beautiful wooden floor. We wanted this room to be very warm, very inviting. It's where the books are, it's where the comfortable furniture is, and they go to hang out. This is called the theory room, where all these knuckleheads hang out. Then you've got the laboratory section that's in the plastic. That's the more of the sterile, and it's lit more sterile. Pavel has a work area. And that's more of the bluish, sort of greenish industrial lights. And then, of course, another research area. So those were the different quadrants. And I think George did an excellent job. And Tommy, his props guy.
Yeah, his prop man.
They've been working together since the Russ Meyer movie days. And a great Mutt and Jeff team who did an excellent job. Now, we did not get money from Red Bull. We're too low budget of a movie. They don't care about people like us. So we just bought a bunch of Red Bull because it was part of the story. That this is the difference between the two guys. Pavel is a modern day man. He wants to be Americanized. He uses slang. He's a rapper of sorts, and
he's a global citizen.
And Ivanov is traditional. He's left over from the communist era, still trying to make his great ideas work without the proper funding that he had before. Hence the funky operation that they have here. Now the idea here is after they've think they have a great discovery is that there's trouble in paradise, that maybe this doesn't work. This now is back on the back lot, and you can see that you bring in junk cars and signs, and all the lettering was Cyrillic, so we had to make sure that we stuck with that. And the one thing that I did early on is David and I discussed this, that maybe we should adapt this for this country. I like some of these shots. This is footage shot by Gary Jones, who did the second unit direction, and just a terrific guy that I go way back about 20 years with in Detroit. We brought Gary on, and what he did is he went around to actual gypsy towns and just shot out the window.
Right.
And he saw the craziest horses, carts, people staring at the camera. The older people were not very enamored with that. They didn't like that, but the children would sort of run after the camera. So he grabbed these strange, National Geographic sort of shots that we use left and right. We mix that in with this back lot to create basically an overall look. And then I should also mention Antoinette Byron, who's right there, playing Jackie. Just a terrific actress who's, been on television for tons of years. And what's so nice, and I'm sure Dave will agree, that these are the actors that you want.
Right.
You want
right.
actors who have experience in television. They can,
right.
they know their lines. They're very professional. They're
yeah,
not
the pace.
Picky.
Yeah,
this is another classic sort of second unit shot by Gary, where he just went to an actual gypsy area and filmed. Bulgaria is pretty lax on permits and street closures and things like that. This is more of the back lot here.
Can I say something about Jackie as a character?
Sure.
One of the things about Jackie when we thought her up was, and Bruce came up with this idea, agreed with, we wanted someone who looked like Jackie Onassis, who would be a rich man's wife, and who was very, fine-featured and petite.
Right, so. Right. And along came Antoinette, courtesy of Mr. Jeff Franklin, the executive producer, who basically has a Rolodex of actors that he likes to work with, and he offered up Stacy and Antoinette and a couple of other folks.
Right.
And worked out good. Here's our first big standoff here. For movies that are made for television, which Screaming Brain technically is for the Sci-Fi Channel, even though this is the feature version of it, something has to happen every 10 minutes. So you'll find in television movies, because they want to leave a cliffhanger for when the commercial comes. So this was originally designed to be one of the first little confrontations, but you'll find that we removed all of our fade-ins and fade-outs, all of our act breaks for this version. But normally, right around here, you'd end with, "They want this car. Dun, 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 dun." We go to a commercial.
Right.
This is more of our Bulgarian backlot. What you see there to the left, a strange park. We didn't even know the park was there. And what happened is after all the workers got in there and cleaned it out, we went, "This is a beautiful park here." So the crew members during lunch would go out and hang out there, and we shot several scenes in there. It was a great all-purpose bit. Now, this is why this guy, Vladimir, is terrific. He was able to... Things like this are difficult to do, I know, as an actor. Handling props, he had to switch hands, he had to steal this guy's gun, he had to kick another guy in the face, headbutt the other guy. And you can always do things through quick cuts and edits. But he was very proficient at all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of these Bulgarian actors, they were theater trained. I mean, they could fight, they could dance, they could, act, and they knew how to build a character. They were really great.
They were very serious about what they did.
Yeah.
They were very committed. They never complained.
Never.
They never had a bad day.
No.
That was a prosthetic hand made by Melanie Tooker, the special effects makeup woman. And you'll see this guy come to play again. This gentleman also, the gentleman whose finger he just broke, was also in Alien Apocalypse. And so another actor that I stole. Those two guys are stuntmen, and it's kind of a handy thing sometimes. If you have a couple of thugs that you need a scene where they get beaten up or whatever, you might as well just cast stuntmen. And so those are two crazy Bulgarian stuntmen.
The idea behind this scene actually was we had to show that Jaeger's character was a badass.
He was a real badass,
So we had to have that moment, and Bruce came up with this where, okay, let's do a carjack. And that's sort of how that scene...
It also establishes Gypsy Town itself.
Yeah, as a bad place.
Yeah, as a dangerous place you don't want to go to, that he's a bad mamma jamma. Also, and that those guys recognize him, so he had a history in Gypsy Town itself.
Right.
And now they pulled up here to the Rankoff Hotel. Technically, it's a 4 or 5 star hotel, but that's, of course, Bulgarian rating. the reality of this area... This hotel was used by the Bulgarian mafia to take their prostitutes. So we had some very strange characters coming and going, and we blocked the street out in front of the hotel, and one day a giant SUV came pulling up with an elderly woman in it, and she didn't want to stop. And so the assistant director, Joel, who's a tremendous dedicated AD, was pounding under the hood of the car saying, you know, stop this car, get out of here, beat it, we own this street. And she gave him this look, and eventually, I think, backed off or pulled around. She got out of there, and my driver later explained, Kiro, who was just a great all-purpose guy, and we all became good friends with him, he explained that was most likely a mafia member's mother who was trying to get to her home that was in that area, and that Joel was actually probably risking his life by doing that, that those guys could have easily come back later and messed him up if they knew that they were stopping, you know, their mother from getting to their house. Mafia guys have a weird thing about their mother, you know. So that's what this hotel was known for. We almost had a different hotel. But who was it, Dave? Was it Steven Seagal was staying there?
No.
Oh, it was Putin's wife.
Putin's wife came in, which kind of put the whole kibosh on that one.
Yes. And, you know, when you have the wife of the head of Russia, they tend to... you know, make decisions quickly. So they kicked us out of this one hotel because it was either... But Steven Seagal was also going to stay there, so they had all kinds of weird scheduling things. So we moved to this hotel.
And worked out much better for us.
Much better because we needed multiple locations from this particular hotel, not
right.
just a hotel. And what it allowed us to do was use various hallways and... various rooms that we could redress.
Right. The other thing about this place is right next to it is the Hawaiian Rankoff.
Yeah.
Which was their tropical version of the hotel.
Now, the one thing I liked about this hotel in particular, it was difficult to light. David Wirth had a problem lighting this because very narrow. It looked like the hull of a ship with this dark wood paneling. So it has a nice, rich look, but it's difficult because where do you put the lights? Where do you hide them?
The other thing about this hall, which was great, was it was very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And between the two characters, I like it because you get a sense that she's closing in on him.
Exactly. And so the plan here is now this woman has a freaky thing about men. She's got a thing about marriage.
And rejection.
Yes. We'll find out a little more of her history later. But basically, she and Yegor here had a thing in the past, and it didn't end well, which we'll find out more about. And obviously now this is building the dynamics between these two men because one is a capitalist, one is a communist. They don't get along. This ring will come into play throughout the movie. The ring wound up being sort of a...
thematic.
A thematic thing because technically if you follow the course of the ring goes from conceivably he had given it to Tatoya or was going to way back when they were together. He took the ring back. William Cole, my character, is looking for the ring. This guy sells it to him. Tatoya gets the ring back. Steals it back.
Right.
Then once these two guys get together in one body, I don't want to spoil the movie for you, but you've probably seen it 8 times already.
I haven't. So.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Dave. Didn't mean to wreck it for you.
Sorry.
Then it winds up back in their hands at the very end. So this is a story of... regained love?
Lost and regained love.
Yes, something like that. Fun thing about all these working in Bulgaria, it's easy to find strange equipment they really do have holdover stuff from communism, 50s and 60s equipment and stuff. But so it was kind of fun to set dress this movie because that's what we needed. We needed funky stuff.
Yeah. Definitely.
And this is where these two guys can pretty much do their bit.
This is a very funny scene.
Ted is wearing a Detroit T-shirt. Ted, of course, most of us, David, myself, and Ted, and a lot of the guys that we work with early on are all from the Detroit area. And Ted, I think, knew of these guys. It was, I forget what the affiliation was, but he wanted to wear some of their shirts. I said, okay, just bring enough so that the wardrobe people can, wash one in while you're wearing one so you're not going to be Mr. Stinky Shirt the whole shoot. Stacy, I think, was just perfect for this role now because, as he matures, like all actors mature, myself as well, you can start to play different characters. And so he was really, what he brought to this, I felt, was the anger that this guy needed. He's sort of this frustrated, tortured scientist with a moron assistant. And Stacy really picked up on that well.
Well, and the thing I love about his performance is he plays it, too, with a sense of whimsy. And you can really see it in the scenes with Ted.
Very much so.
I mean, playing it with a twinkle in his eye. I thought he was just great. So. Now, what's this scene here, Bruce?
Well, basically now, they're trying to petition William Cole because William Cole is a drug company magnet who's over here looking for business opportunities. These guys get whiffed that he's in town. He's dictating this letter in hopes that William Cole, his drug company, will consider their scientific breakthrough for an anti-rejection drug, meaning you can put any body part, together whatsoever.
Right.
And this, of course, is where Pavel gets ideas of his own. He's a professional moron.
Which basically leads to disaster.
Yes. And so he's the wrong guy to have. Now, this was a very interesting location.
This was a real subway.
It was a real incomplete subway under the city of Sofia. That tunnel that you're looking at there probably ran for about 2 miles in either direction.
Right.
And this is one advantage of, in independent filmmaking, I think the real key is tap dancing as fast as you can and being light on your feet and being willing to adjust.
Right.
So it was rewritten, and as a result, we got a massive location that looks like $1 million, essentially, for whatever they paid for it. I have no idea.
Right.
A bag of wheat. I'm not sure. And it was just a really handy thing to stay flexible because we knew we wanted a set piece. We knew we had to have a reason why William Cole was there to invest in something. So we were looking for a sewer, a subway.
Yeah, he needed a public works.
Yeah, and in fact, the assistant director, Joel, I think, mentioned, because he was an American living in Bulgaria who had worked on numerous movies, he recommended that they try that subway because I think he saw it on a scout or something.
It worked great for us.
And check this out. It was in the middle of a park in the middle of the city. There was this bizarre Geiger-ish entrance.
Yeah.
This broken down, creepy looking tunnel coming right out of the ground that you could just walk down and go into this tunnel. It was very freaky, but it was perfect for what we needed.
And for us, since it's the final set piece, one of the movies that had an influence on us was The Third Man. So
yeah,
we were trying to emulate the sewer sequence at the end of that.
And we wanted some creepiness, some scope to it. And the beauty of Bulgaria is that it had some opportunities that we took advantage of. And now this is another sequence where, again, the dialogue was important. So we wanted to make sure that we got it. This is an important setup between these two because we're about to see sort of a love quadrangle form here.
Right.
You've got this woman making advances on what she considers to be a real man.
Right.
That her husband's not a real man. He's this kind of a weasel and a coward and a cheapskate and an idiot. That's me. I specialize in those characters. And so this draws those two together. And then coming up, we'll see the other half of the love quadrangle.
I love the scene, too. It was really, they played this great, both of them.
I think they did. They enjoyed it. It's I think they both had chemistry, too.
It was good foreplay.
Which, honestly, again, you can't guarantee that. You can put a man and a woman together in front of a camera, and you could get zero.
Right.
And it's tough to manufacture that. These are more Gary Jones shots of driving around the city. This is an alternate angle. It had these two access tunnels you'll see on the lower left there, with these strange, smaller access tunnels,
right,
and then the main giant tunnel. This is an old TV trick. We were running short of time. We're actually looking down the same tunnel in both directions, looking at both of these actors here. you'll see I'm on the right side there, and then you'll see when it cuts, he's on the left side. What we did was, normally you would turn the camera all the way around and look in the opposite direction to film the other actor. But we didn't have time, so we just moved the actor into my shot, had him look a different way, changed the lighting in the background, and used it for both directions. You can do that when you're short on time.
Right.
This little love sequence was shot in this park that was cleared out.
Hence the Happy Taxi.
Yes, the Happy Taxi. And I named it such because there was a bar. They had a whole series of bar restaurants called the Happy something. What was it, Dave?
The Happy Cafe.
The Happy Cafe. Everything was happy this, happy that. All the cabs had silly names, and it was just crazy. So I thought, well, let's just do it. And, you know, they would do that. They would just plaster a sign on their cab.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, this is the only scene, or one of the few scenes I have in the movie with Ted.
Right.
And I need to do better with that. I need more scenes with Ted in the future, because he's just great to work with, and he's, you know, he's a rubber face. He's a spaz.
And he's got good timing.
Well, he's just wicked good. Yeah. I like him. And now, this was Ted's whole bit. I had written kind of a bad English translation of this, but Ted went, hey, can I run this by you? So we brought a crappy typewriter to the set, and Ted actually typed this letter to make it more like an Anthony Robbins win-win situation, using terms like part of your team.
Filtered through Bulgaria.
Yeah, that he had heard about good business decisions like over in Bulgaria, and he's trying to pitch this guy like an infomercial because he doesn't know any better.
Totally ignoring the doctor's...
Yeah, the doctor has this completely rational letter that's written, and he completely screws it up.
Right.
And William Cole rejects him flat out.
And the thing I love about Bruce is no one gets mad like Bruce on camera. He really, when he wants to burn, he's great. He really can get wound up.
My wife Ida thinks I walk like a boxer in this shot. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
We added a reprise of Tatoya's singing here, like at the very beginning, just to remind folks that this was the same woman. And this, of course, is where now the second half of this love intrigue begins. This is really, David, this is a sordid tale.
It's a totally sordid tale.
In fact, there was a review of this once where someone said that there wasn't a single likable character in the entire movie.
My kind of movie.
And that's why they like to see them tormented, because every character in this movie winds up being completely tormented.
No, but the other thing, too, is everybody ends up getting what they want.
Yes.
At the end.
In a strange way, it's a happy story.
Yes.
So I wanted Gorski because I'd worked with her in the past, and I knew that she was a very committed actress. And I knew that if I told her she was playing a gypsy, she'd go crazy doing everything. Of course, she's stealing the... So this is the next transfer of the ring now. Ring now goes from William to her.
Right, who he's bought for Jackie to make her happy.
And my wife laughs at this shot. She goes, what are you doing? Are you sucking blood out of her neck? So when we shot this, I was just trying to figure out a way to keep myself busy while she could pickpocket me. And I think I hung out there a little too long. My wife laughs every time she watches that scene.
Right, and here's where Tatoya starts to go crazy because she thinks that he's in love with her, and he's going, there's no way.
Well, she has a rejection issue. She didn't react well to Yegor rejecting her, or the guy at the beginning who she stabbed. So she was about to stab him, basically.
Right.
So Jackie kind of saved his life.
Yeah, I like this scene here.
Now we have the demise. This is sort of the Melrose Place sequence here, where you have the two rich people arguing in a fancy hotel. This was the Aaron Spelling scene. Look at that tie. The tie is left over, Dave. I'm telling you, the styles in Europe, Eastern Europe, are so different than America.
Right.
I got this double-breasted Thurston Howell suit.
Yeah.
But it still looks like it's from the 70s.
Totally from the 70s.
And I grew the mustache intentionally because I just wanted a sort of a harsher, more conservative look to the guy. He has to be a conservative capitalist and with short cropped hair. And fortunately, I had a partial beard on Alien Apocalypse, the film before. So after that film wrapped, I just stopped shaving immediately, and I could get a good jump on a mustache.
Right, right.
Fortunately, I can sort of squeeze grow a mustache, and in a couple of weeks, I can get one going.
Right. And being from Detroit and living there in the 70s, this was the perfect look, Bruce.
It was.
Right. So here, what happens here? Jackie's...
Well, now she's out of there. So she's split. She is officially leaving William. His life is falling apart. Yegor doesn't know what's going on here because... he had a thing with her, but he doesn't know what her deal is, per se.
Right.
Now William's like, okay, where is she?
He's going to go get her now.
Let's get that ring. Now, again, these are all locations in the same Rankoff hotel here, employee rooms where we would bring in lockers and sort of dress them up a little. Now she's reacting to the fact that that was their ring.
Right.
What is William doing with that ring? So confuses her, too. What has that devil done?
Right.
Now, what's nice about Tamara Gorski is that she worked with a gypsy woman and got a number of translated sayings. So if I threw out a line and I said, hey, she should say something like this, she would look at her list and go, how about bah, blah, blah, blah? And I go, that's perfect.
Right. She would always come up to me and say, what do you think of these slogans? I say,
yes.
I think they're great.
Now, this is the death of William Cole. This represents a major shift in the film.
Right.
It's always a big deal when you kill your lead character. This would be considered what I would say is the end of Act One.
Right.
It's the, structurally, it's the point of no return, where you've established your characters, you've met Jackie, Tatoya, William, Yeager, you see all the dynamics. This sequence will now play up their past relationship.
Right.
And everyone kept wondering, why did you die in such a weird position? And my answer to that is, people die in weird positions. You ever see someone dead? Mm-hmm. Or on the news or something, they're always in strange, twisted positions. Where you land is just how you land. You don't land like in a movie. So it is a strange look. I'm kind of face down. But that's just how it worked out. This was a good scene between these two. Again, you don't know if these two will get along or have chemistry.
Right.
And between the two of them, I think they had it too, because you're asking two actors to manufacture a bogus background that they never had.
Right. And they pulled it off, I think.
I think so, too.
You know, there's all this anger she has for him, and, you know, she starts to seduce him. And
now she's pulling the same line.
Pulling the line,
Can I have you one last time?
Right.
And, of course, being a typical man.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, baby.
Sure.
This was a fun thing. He's got, what he did is he wanted the makeup people to add those calluses to his knuckles, as though he had beaten the crap out of so many people.
Right.
His knuckles were kind of like a boxer's.
That was his touch, yeah.
And we added a little hammer and sickle on his hand, like a tattoo. Now, being for the Sci-Fi Channel, you can't be too graphic, you know, with the violence. They love violence on the Sci-Fi Channel, but not the graphic stuff.
Right.
So we had to be a little careful about that. And now, of course, this is where the second lead character is going to be dead. Which I think, you know, in laying this out, David and I felt that, you know, it's a good way to go. You've killed both your lead characters at the end of Act One.
It's what I always loved about this story, Bruce.
Right.
I always thought that was a great hook for us.
It's a big twist.
Yeah.
That normally you wouldn't, your lead characters would be alive and well through the whole movie,
right,
and things would happen to them. But, you
right
know, this is a chance to... This was sort of taken after the... There's a legend of King Robert the Bruce, who I'm related to.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. It was a sequence where he killed a man, and he got a death grip on something.
Right.
So we figured that it wouldn't be so hard for her to get that thing out of this tough guy's hand.
Right.
This was also the back lot. This was a painted building. If you looked any further up that building, you'd see the old paint job. We just painted as much of it as we needed.
And cropped it.
Made a hospital exterior. This was just a classroom that we added some paneling, painting, and some hospital equipment. This was also in that same very building. So this back lot probably gave us about 10 or 11 different locations that we could use without moving anywhere.
It was 14, actually.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay. I lost count. And now, of course, this is the sequence where it's really a goodbye, because she's told that he's not going to breathe, he can't do anything. And, again, this is where Antoinette's background really comes into play, because she's done these scenes 100 times. She was on... Oh, good Lord, any major sort of soap show that you've seen, she has a long resume, and this sort of stuff is really, she's good at it.
Right.
And we decided, you know, this, your movie can be silly and weird, but you still have to play stuff straight, because this gets a laugh anyway. Okay, doctor, pull the plug.
They love it.
So she's kind of heartless on one hand, but she's also, she's going to go get revenge.
Right.
Now, this guy, I will spill the beans a little bit. This was the guy that we were thinking of for the Yeager role.
Right.
And we feel that the guy that we chose, Vladimir, was a good selection.
Well,
this guy was fine, but...
He was a good actor, but his English wasn't as good.
It wasn't as good, and we found it was critical to be able to understand our actors.
And Yeager, who we picked, was sexier, so...
Yeah, so we think we were very fortunate in that. Those are shots of antennas up there, and you wouldn't believe, basically on top of every building is just an amalgamation of wires, antennas.
Didn't you come up with that bit while we were there? The cutaways to all those antennas in the beginning?
Perhaps, because again...
Because it wasn't in the original script. I remember you talking
about it. No,
it
wasn't, but we wanted to get a link between a broadcast and the fact that they were actually receiving the broadcast.
Right.
Now, this is an interesting point. This is kind of where the movie goes to a different place. This is where it ratchets up a different level. She's been here. She heard the story about Tatoya. She knows it's in Gypsy Town. She knows this woman lives above the bridal shop.
Doesn't care that it's Gypsy Town now.
No, no. And she's a tough rich chick who's gonna show her mettle in the scene. Now, the thing is, we could have used stunt women here and there, but
the girls didn't want to.
I wanted to do this scene also with them, that there's no doubles, there's no stunt people. And, you know, it's fun to push actors to see what you can get out of them. And these two were very game.
Yeah.
You know, you put padding on the floor. We added a little cat sound effect there. Because this is an effect, a cat fight. coming up here is kind of a fun sequence with the help of Gary Jones and a dummy.
Right.
And what this is, the idea is, you know, a stunt person can do a stair fall. But not that kind of stair fall.
Not really, no.
And so what it is this is a combination of the actress, a stunt woman, and a dummy.
Right.
To really get the fact that she fell down the stairs. She had to break her neck. And so on the soundtrack, you'll hear every break, snap, crunch, and bash that we could come up with.
Right.
And I think it's effective because the audience, it's a hurtful scene. And, of course, here we are now in the laboratory. This is the operation room. Inside the sterile bubble.
And what is this here, Bruce?
That was, it was kind of, we did that with an anamorphic lens. What it does is it warps your image, and you can roll that lens, and it'll distort it. So it's all in camera. It's an incredibly cheap special effect that cost $12. It cost the cost of renting the lens, and then we slowed it down, probably 48 frames a second instead of 24, to give that warpo look. Because throughout this movie now, we're going to see various brain flashes of what's happening in this guy's head.
Which is the struggle between the two men.
Correct. And so hopefully we've established now that they're going to basically take his damaged portion of his brain, replace it with that of this crazy Russian operative.
Right.
And what's nice about this, these two guys, again, two actors working together, this is just a bit that they...
I love this bit.
That they came up with, that Pavel wants to be just like Dr. Ivanov. And Stacy's great. You know, he's got that great deadpan look. Now, this is Melanie Tooker, this first gypsy coming in here. She begged me. She couldn't wait to play a gypsy. She loves makeup, loves costumes, so she blacked out her teeth. She got very excited about this.
Yeah, she was all jacked up about this one, I remember.
Sure, people got her hooked up.
Yeah.
She just couldn't wait to do that.
Didn't it get rescheduled once?
Yeah, we had to put her off once. She was very, very upset about that.
Right.
So she finally got her big day. And now, of course, it's the idea here is that they're intercepting these police broadcasts before the police even really get there, and Pavel sneaks out with his little van. A major turning point here, 3 days later, now we have a third character dead. She's now Jackie's dead and in sort of in limbo here in the lab while they figure out what to do with her. Now we have the testing of the monster. You know, will the Frankenstein monster
live?
Live, exactly. So they're doing the five senses test, the smell, the touch, the feeling, the hearing.
Right.
And again, you know, Ted would just add all this stuff. And you just got to let these guys do it. They were very good at that. And Ted does a number of that stuff. You know, with Ted, you... of course, that's his idea, too. I'm gonna burn this guy. I don't know why.
And he doesn't stop.
No. He doesn't even know why he's being scolded.
He's funny and annoying at the same time.
That would be fannoying.
Yes.
Now, here's the first glimpse of the actual man with the screaming brain, makeup by Melanie Tooker. Melanie did Bubba Hotep with me, and we've worked together going back to, good gracious, Army of Darkness and beyond. And so we worked with Melanie for years, and we were fortunate enough to get her on this because we understand each other. She knows all my quirks, and she's just a really great, great worker. I'll have you know that I did some of these drawings. I'm not.
Oh, you did?
I'm not proud of them. I sketched it in. Someone had to do it. I'm not saying it's great.
It works.
But now we had to illustrate now really what's happening. And Ted threw in these lines of, you know, who was the donor. Originally, Ivanov said it's irrelevant, but Ted had this line of, a horrible man, that he's kind of giving it all away. He can't even keep a secret. And again, this is a good bit between these two guys, where Ivanov is trying to be the good doctor. He's trying to keep his patient calm, and, you know, Pavel is doing everything he can
to annoy him.
To screw it up.
Right.
So now we're testing motion to make sure that he's, in fact, all in one piece here. And Pavel doesn't even know what he's talking about here. So I guess everything's okie-dokie now.
Until?
And I think this is the hint here now. We tried to hint it early on in the movie that the cells that they created, the cells that they were hoping with two different DNA profiles that would stay together, are now, maybe they're not going to work so good.
They're not cooperating.
And also that these two guys, their brains don't really want to go together. So we had to establish that. And fun thing about movies is you can do these flash images and tell stories quickly and through a rapid series of cuts. Because what we also had to do was film, we had to film other sequences like here. This was meant to be specifically a flashback. So when we shot the regular scene, we also had to put that special lens on,
right,
and go at 48 frames and get her doing the same action again, only knowing that it would be used much later in the movie as a flashback.
Right.
That's the beauty of writing a script, is that you can then know what you have to shoot specifically on the day of shooting.
Right. Here he's starting to get agitated.
Starting to unravel a little bit.
Right.
This is where you've, of course, you can't go on a great adventure unless you break free from the lab. So.
Right. A la Frankenstein.
And these are flashes just showing that the Jaeger's background is in him. He's having these flashes that aren't his. So they're going to try and put him back on the lab, the operating table here, and operate on him. But I don't think he's going to have any of that.
No.
And this is fun. You know, Ted is very game about this sort of thing. Same with Stacy. You know, these guys have all done stunts in the past, and most professional actors can do this stuff without hurting themselves. And that way, you don't have to get stuntmen and fake it. This was a little bit of a stolen shot.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. We didn't really have a point of view of the great big city beyond. So. You do what you can sometimes. Sometimes you're missing a shot or two in a movie and you just can't find it anywhere. You got to dig it up.
Right.
Again, this is a Ted Raimi edition. Here the creature breaks free from the lab and all he's really concerned about is dinner.
This gets a good laugh.
Now, this is the sequence where everything's now going right to left. It's now going against your natural view. And this was very fun to be in front of this wonderful
cathedral
here, scaring school children. I think it was important. This is what I called the Mustache Man. In preparation, when we were driving around scouting, these bizarre communist statues were everywhere.
They're everywhere.
So I wanted to develop a sequence that just tortured our capitalist character. He's surrounded by communism. This we call the Misery Statue. If you look at these sculptures, they're all horrible. It's people weeping and screaming and moaning.
Tortured.
And so we figured it was kind of perfect. Behind there, there's a bazaar. There's an outdoor bazaar where you can buy Nazi paraphernalia.
Right.
They had swastikas from World War II. It was just crazy. You could buy just about anything there. They had Iraqi dinars with Saddam on them. So during this one day of filming, we kind of went around to every one of these big monuments. This monument is massive. It's hard to even capture.
It's part of this larger monument.
Right, exactly. And so they've got all these shots of these monuments of men holding
their
guns
big,
in the air, women clutching their men and their babies, all very patriotic.
Yeah, they're big on marching into war.
Yes, yes, defending the homeland.
Right. And I guess this was a very famous Bulgarian hero.
And so,
what happens here in the story now?
Well, essentially now, this is the first time that we've heard that there's someone else in his head, that Jaeger is, in fact, we can hear him in his head.
It's the first realization.
So this is trying to figure out who's got whose side, that it seems that William controls the right and Jaeger controls the left. And me being a left-hander, I felt it was handy to let the other guy be with my left. That's my natural hand, so that I could, if I needed to do stuff with it. Now, here's a good shot of the whole thing. This thing was absolutely huge, that monument. This is a chop shop that is also on our Bulgarian back lot. It's just a Quonset hut that was revealed once all the bushes and shrubs were taken out of the way.
At this point, they've decided they have to get food, clothes.
They need food, shelter, a mode of transportation, clothing, all that sort of stuff. All the basics. But, of course, they can't agree on which car to use because William wants a higher-end car And Yeager wants his old taxi back that apparently has been stolen and is...
They don't know why at this point either. That's the thing I love about it.
Right. They don't know what... You know, they're still at a major conflict with each other here. Of course, you got to beat yourself up. So that's why I made Yeager left-handed and me right-handed.
Right.
And you'll hear all throughout here, whenever something happens, we added a dog barking because there were kind of wild dogs everywhere in Bulgaria. So whenever there's a loud noise or a horn honk or a car screech, you'd usually hear some dog going, aroo, 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 aroo. So you'll hear all through here in Gypsy Town, there are goats and dogs that are kind of barking everywhere that we added.
Right.
Courtesy of George Groves, the sound designer.
Right, and here he's about to steal the car.
Yeah, got to look for a tool.
Right. He had his Jimmy.
Yeah, because Yeager would know that. That's kind of the beauty of having a street-smart character. William himself couldn't do any of this, but, you know, Yeager has sort of lived in the streets, is a tough guy. Now, this gag, I will admit, is strictly for my friend Scott Spiegel. There's no reason to do this gag otherwise. And particularly the second half, because the gag could have ended there.
But no.
But instead, for Scott, that the woman, she'd be horrified at first, but then she thinks, hey, that's kind of interesting, a guy humping a car.
Yep.
She was copping a perv.
Right. They finally, this is the first beginnings where they actually start to work together.
Right.
They come to terms at least on this one issue.
Right. Now here's Yuri, the guy who got his finger broken the first time by Yeager.
Right.
He's the little chop-chop freak who's in Gypsy Town. He's a Gypsy Town punk. And obviously William hasn't really driven himself much.
In his whole life.
In his life, because he's rich. Everyone is driving him around. So... He's a piss. We wanted to establish that he's a piss poor driver, that we could sort of pay that off later.
Right.
So now they have to cooperate again. You know, we see his excellent driving skills. And what's funny about these shots is that I think Gary Jones just did it. He just had his driver go out and cut in front of other cars.
Right.
They don't block streets in Bulgaria. They just don't do it.
There's no permits.
Now this we actually shot in a park, a very nice little park, and this is an actual gypsy man. Who, you know, if you're going to get an extra, you might as well get someone who really would do that. Now, Dave, you better tell us about that T-shirt.
Oh, it's from a summer camp I used to go to many years ago called Camp Tamaqua. Sam Raimi also went there. And
there's a Tamaqua T-shirt in Evil Dead. So
it's sort of a running gag for us. Whenever we make a movie, we have to put it in there somewhere in the movie.
Because Dave gets money for it.
I get no money for it.
The idea here is that Yeager will not wear a tie.
Right.
William wants a suit and tie.
Right.
But Yeager won't have anything of it.
Right.
But now William, there's no way in hell he's going to wear this dumb peasant outfit with a fishing hat.
Right.
They've got a compromise here.
Right. Was this thing clean?
This was a brand new one, I'm happy to say.
You were very specific about that.
That they painted to look gross. Now these pants with this fake bleach stuff and the disco shirt, just so you know, this stuff is on sale in Bulgaria.
Right.
There were pants that they thought they were trying to imitate the bleached jeans like you've worn them for a while, but they did it so piss poorly that it looked like these white stripes on the jeans, and everyone thought they were so hip walking around, and they all look like morons. So I thought, he's got to have those jeans, and I've always enjoyed those dumb hats from the 70s, you know, these big kind of almost a pimp hat. And so I went shopping with the costume designer, and we got these white bozo shoes that were mesh. And people would actually wear this stuff. And at first I thought, those shoes are perfect. They're great. And I thought they looked good, but they were the most uncomfortable, god-awful shoes that I think I partially ruined my feet here.
This was the disco outfit.
Yeah, it's a disco outfit. That shirt, in Bulgaria, you can't find duplicates of anything. Like with these jeans, it was hard to find two and three pairs because it's Bulgaria. They just don't have the supply that we have here in the States. So that shirt was actually made for me. We picked a fabric
right.
That was a ridiculous fabric, because I'd seen several Bulgarian men walking around in these crazy disco outfits, and so Katya, who's the costume designer, had it custom made, which is kind of fun. I wear it to parties and things like that. Now the idea here is we're going to figure out what to do with Jackie. What can she be used for? And apparently not much, so they got to get a whole new body. This is where Pavel offers up his P-Money Mobot.
And this is also the other thing for me in this scene is that Stacy's character agrees to let him do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, he begrudgingly, because they have no other option. Now, this is all Ted, so if you like this, you can write Ted a letter and thank him. This is his rap. It was his idea to do a rap, and we figured, well, why not have the robot kind of doing the jiggy thing with it? So kid wanted to be a DJ, so there you go.
I love Stacy's delivery here.
All right, Babu.
Yeah, well, what he gets about, again, it's this thing of, it's this anger here.
Right.
Starting with, like, right here.
Boy, he really knows how to turn a line.
Get busy.
Yeah, so it's good. And, of course, Pavel isn't really going to listen to him anyway. He's still going to play with his robot.
Right. Yeah, Pavel sort of ignores him anyway.
Yeah, Pavel's just too much of an idiot. Now, yeah. The guy, we should mention Velimir, the guy in the suit.
Unbelievable.
A great guy who had played a creature in a Wesley Snipes movie, and we knew that he had suffered the tortures of the damned in this suit, so we knew he'd be perfect. And he was just a great mime. When he auditioned...
He freaked me out.
He blew everyone away. Guys would come in doing a regular kind of pantomime of being trapped in an airless box or something. Now watch who's there. Now who's there, David? Coming up right there.
It's my wife, Alyssa.
And
myself.
Now David Goodman, I swore, would never be in the Screen Actors Guild because he's too poor of an actor. He's a great producer, but I vowed never to put him on film, and somehow he convinced me to put him in this movie, and I did it only because of his wife, not because of him.
Grudgingly so.
Yeah, so we had to cut around him.
As much as you could.
For his ridiculous reaction shots. But his wife was very good.
Right.
So we left her, and we couldn't really cut around you because you were stuck in the same shot with her. So
the DP, David Wirth, actually had a crush on her. And I will say this, too, though. The thing is, that in that scene that day, I actually dressed up, and I think I freaked the crew out.
You did, because they never saw you like that before.
Right.
Now, this actress, she was also in Alien Apocalypse, and I stole her because she played a very bitchy character in Alien Apocalypse, and I thought she would be perfect as this kind of bitchy waitress. And it turns out she was. Now, just after this, she was going to the Black Sea to play a clown for the summer. So I guess that's what you do in Bulgaria when you're not in Man with the Screaming Brain movies for the Sci-Fi Channel. Now, this, of course, was to... show that the two guys they're going to hit a peak here, that they can't get along, they can't order the same food, the same drinks, they can't agree on anything.
Right.
And the idea is to have that play out in a public venue. It's one thing to argue with yourself in an alley, but we figured let's make this a little more public.
It raises the stakes, too.
It does. And, of course, now we have to have the soup and salad bar, and Yegor, the character... wants everything that's savory, and he wants radishes and onions and the caviar and all the gross things that sort of a Midwest guy like William
would loathe.
And we've got the red peppers and all that sort of thing. And so now they have a little argument with themselves.
Right.
This was, in fact, the first day of shooting.
Yes.
And it's always very strange when you have to do a bunch of weird stuff as an actor. The crew doesn't know who you are.
Right.
Everyone's getting used to everyone.
This was the first scene we shot.
Yeah. And so you have to kind of hit the ground running. So it felt weird doing all these strange things in front of a crew that didn't even know my name, basically.
Right.
But you have to just do it. So now we're just going to calm down. Now the two drinks have arrived, and of course that's not going to work. So, because obviously one guy favors vodka, the other guy favors scotch.
Right.
I did scotch in order of my, in honor of my dad, Charlie Campbell, who was a scotch drinker. And I'm Scottish.
Now
we have a little competition. It's going to be, they're going to do it fair and square. Whoever gets there can have it.
Of course, they get there at the same time.
Yes.
Here we go.
What's going to happen, Dave? I'm concerned.
It didn't go well at all.
See, they say he has a drinking problem.
Right. Of course, me and my wife get fed up here.
Yes, indeed.
And we leave.
You see that excellent reaction from David? He just nailed that.
That double take. You caught my spit take.
Yes, I did. It was too good.
It was too good.
It'll be in the foreign version.
Oh, good.
Now, this was a case where trying to get the Bulgarian extras to react was actually very difficult.
Right.
They're very close to the best people. They don't react well.
They're not expressive.
No, because I think they're used to hiding their emotions.
I see.
This is a quick little montage saying everybody's inside your little peanut here. You're stuck with both guys.
Seeing the picture triggers the memory.
Yes, of the two dead people.
Right.
So now we get into what is really the screaming brain sequence, kind of.
Right, right.
It all sets it off. He now realizes this is where the two characters, in a way, this is...
it's your midway point, really.
Yeah, kind of a way that they know who they are now. He knows that that William is in there and Yeager is in there, and he just can't cool down. He's got to do anything he can to soothe his brain.
Right.
Now, I must say, on behalf of Bulgaria... In Europe, they have some of the cleanest bathrooms in all of Europe.
Yeah,
and so
this was a set deck.
We intentionally made this filthy, gross bathroom. So don't, tourists, you can still go to Bulgaria. It's a very nice place.
I love your hair in this scene, Bruce.
Yeah.
It just was the best.
Well, Melanie Tucker was having an absolute heart attack this day because, okay, now, Melanie, I'm going to flush my head in the toilet. Okay, now I'm going to take some milk and pour it. Now, this milk is weird. If you use real milk, it'll pour out okay, but it won't stay on your body.
This was great.
So what this stuff was, it was actually it was like a, not a dye, but it was a coloring. It was like a white powder that they mixed in, and it didn't go anywhere. It stayed on the shirt in a perfect drippy pattern, and regular milk would actually not have done that. And this is where Mel was like having a complete meltdown. So I, you know, stick my head in the toilet, stick my head, cover it with milk.
Put ice on it.
Put ice all over it. Right. And she thought that the thing was just going to pop off my head.
And this is the bizarre agreement right here.
Yes. The two guys agree to team up to find the woman that killed them both, and she happens to be in Gypsy Town, so they got to go to Gypsy Town and get her back.
Going back, they have to go into the belly of the beast.
Yes. On television, this would be the end of an act. We would go dun, 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 and then fade up on this shot. But in a feature film, you got to keep going.
And they have a grim determination now.
Now he realizes, having parked in this rough part of town, and the goat is laughing at him on the soundtrack, he's forced to go with this.
Another mode of transportation.
Yes, which originally was a blue Vespa.
Right.
With no tassels, that the transpo guys got.
Promised.
They said everything was going to be fine because we had to have a Vespa that they would let us wreck, and more on that story later.
Right.
This was also a Melanie Tucker design. What it is she took a rough cast of Antoinette in pre-production and sculpted sort of a Jackie-like head. And you can see that occasionally you can see through her mouth there's actually a wire. A speaker. It's sort of a metal speaker inside there, and you can see it light up when she talks.
This is Jackie Vision.
Yeah, this is Jackie Vision that we'll see throughout. It's a way to give the audience a readout of how she's doing. Is she charged up? How are all of her systems? And it's a good visual thing because, you know, Sci-Fi Channel loves all the bells and whistles and dials and sounds.
Didn't you have the mime actually shoot it?
The mime did, in fact, shoot a lot of it. I shot some of it, but his motions, his electronic motions, his mechanical motions were very good, and I couldn't stop as sharply as he could. So we would often give him the camera and have him recreate the motions that he did. So, yeah, that was pretty handy. Just shot with a regular Handycam, low-budget video camera. And, of course, this is where now William has left the lab. All creations have to leave the lab.
Escape the lab.
So she is on her way to Gypsy Town to exact revenge. So everything is going toward Gypsy Town now.
And see, what they don't realize is that in her mind, she's bent on revenge now.
Yep, she's a determined robot. And the idea here was to give her 1950s boobs. That sort of, this is something that the scientists would have put together. They're not great at creating creatures, so they'd have a rudimentary mask. They'd know that she's a woman, so they give her boobs, even though she's, you know, in a suit. And because it had to be an armature, we had to cast a pantomime guy that was not fat, you know, for lack of a better expression, didn't have too much meat on his bones because it had to look like it was an armature in there.
And we wanted to have simple designs, too.
Yeah. So obviously this is a near miss. Everyone's missing everyone. And, of course, Pavel thinking that he's the greatest assistant ever, bitching about the fact that, you know, he's a old eye eagle.
Right. Yeah, can't even get it right.
And I think this was Ted's first day of shooting.
Yes, it was.
And, you know, again, you have to say to your actor, hello, good morning, Ted, here's a cup of coffee. Okay, action.
Right.
And, of course, he drives right past her. So she's on a mission. She's looking around, trying to get her way to Gypsy Town. Her battery's now getting a little lower, 55%.
Right.
So she's got to get herself going. Power, low.
Isn't the bus coming up?
Yes, it'll be coming up eventually. Now the idea of... Now we go back to our chop shop with our character Yuri because we wanted to pay that off. That on her way to Gypsy Town, she happens to find a way that she can juice herself up. So again, these are shots that either I filmed or Velimir, our pantomime, did. And you can see he's actually an incredibly thin man who unfortunately probably lost 10 pounds during the course of the shoot because he sweat under that mask.
Right.
And this is fun. This actor was very good at sort of vamping and having fun with it. You want power? What are you talking about, you freak?
So she grabs a battery pack.
Right, that's right. She's got her two little nodules on there.
Gives herself a boost.
And away she goes. Here we see charging complete. She's ready to go again.
Hey, get out of
Now we have a reprise. He's already had his finger broken once. He's getting in her face.
Oh!
That's gotta hurt.
It's gotta hurt.
And so that one was a slightly different sound effect because we had to add a little wood breaking from his little splint as well. And it was fun with subtitles. I could let these Bulgarian actors just say whatever they wanted. I'd tell them what they were supposed to be saying, and who knows what they actually said. And then we could put a subtitle in there for just about everything. And of course, this sequence is in here to show what a complete moron Pavel is. That he's old Eye Eagle, but he can't even identify his own creation. The challenge here, of course, was to create a situation where you could almost mistake.
This is real Mace here.
Well, yeah, it was funny. Well, not the stuff that hit Ted in the eyes, but
right.
The prop department had nothing that could duplicate as something that you could push a button and it would spray out. So on the actress's side, it was a real can of mace that she would spray, and all the crew would just run for the covers. Sometimes the wind would blow it back at her, so
yeah.
She was freaking out. So
yeah.
In between every take, we had to let the air completely sort of evaporate in there. Now, this I wrote specifically because I knew that we were going to get Stacey Keach. And with actors, you've got to give them stuff to do, is my feeling. I mean, the story comes first, but there's many cases where if you know you have a decent actor who can do these little, this is his sort of tortured soliloquy. And actors live for this stuff.
You don't want to waste them when you have them.
No, if you're going to get Stacey Keach,
you got to write a scene for him.
Yeah, let him act. Let him do his stuff. And really, but the idea behind the scene is that it's not working. It failed. He's suffering from failure, and he's appealing to his mentor. You know, the early father of Russian biophysics, to give him inspiration. And so it's...
And what does he discover here?
Well, basically that he found a way. He wished that he could just figure out a way that they could live together without even knowing it. He wants to build a wall.
In the DNA.
Yes. And so it binds them and separates them at the same time. So while everything is falling apart, going to hell in a handcart on the outside, you know, you've got Jackie on the loose, you've got William on the loose, Tatoy on the loose, everything's falling apart. He has finally potentially found the solution, and if they can get to William in time, maybe that could help his situation.
You could save him.
Now, what Melanie did with this suit, and I told her, I said, I don't want cables. I want to be able to show this woman just walking around doing normal things, and we're going to rely on this mime to pull it off. I don't want to have people out of frame pulling remote control things that can break and snap.
It saved us a ton of time.
Well, I said I want to be able to put the head on and call action, and that's essentially what it was. And so this, of course, is where she's stopping a bus because it's more efficient transportation. And, of course, Pavel misses the boat. So this is a chance now for... to see life on a Bulgarian bus.
I like the scene coming. She sits next to the girl.
Yeah, this was just sort of a serendipity thing that kind of wound up that after introducing this woman to the right, that our jealous Jackie, because it's still a woman, she sees this woman with a nice bust, and, you know, she's trying to shore herself up a little bit. And I told her to turn away, like, she's done with her. She's done talking to her.
And, off she goes.
Dealing with her. This is also our lovely back lot. We had several long streets that a lot of it already had junk on it, but a lot of other junk was brought in and spread out here.
Right. Here's...
Yes?
Stacy.
I have the good news and the bad news.
Of course, he's been punched in the nose, so we had to shove the stuff up Ted's nose.
Right.
And at one point, the scene where he and the woman was cut out briefly... and we realized it was going to be problematic because he's got these things in his nose. What if you didn't show that scene, how did he get those things up his nose? But we thought it was kind of a fun scene anyway, so it was put back in.
Pavel, for his sake, does take a beating in this movie.
He does, but again, these are all the, as that one reviewer said, they're all undesirable characters, so you want to see him tortured.
Right.
Now, this is a very bizarre sequence in the bridal shop where now Tatoya has kind of lost it.
Yeah, she's gone over the deep end.
All her men are
point.
Dead. I have an empty bed. There's no one left but me, so I'm just going to marry myself. And I also kind of wanted the idea that you'd have a lead character running around in a wedding dress. So she takes the bus. The robot's taking the bus. This crazy chick is marrying herself. And again, this was on our back lot. This was an empty storefront that we brought stuff in and dressed it. There was really nothing. Funny thing is inside there is the laboratory set.
Right.
And so we put this set right next to the laboratory set. We The real trick is to keep everything as close together as you possibly can. And I think the production team really did an excellent job of just making this work.
Here's the ring again.
Yes, now she's introducing the ring. She's wearing it, and she's going to keep it forever. But not if Jackie has her way.
Who enters.
Yes, so now we have a slight variation of the catfight that, you know, there are,
the tables are turned now.
Tables are turned slightly here, but, you know, Tatoya is very resourceful. And she does have a gun that she stole from Yegor.
Right.
And so what we did here, obviously the voice is in fact Antoinette's voice, put through a little harmonizer to make it sound like she's coming from a speaker. And if you shoot a robot, they don't bleed, they spark.
And she plugs her.
Right. Now we have a malfunction. And what's nice about the Jackie vision is you can show her condition over and over.
Mm-hmm.
You got to put the gun in your garter there, of course. I wish we could have held on that longer because Velimir, the mime, did a really great thing of trying to take a step and not being able to. The part of his body worked, but the other part didn't. But we wanted to kind of keep the pace going here, so some of those things get cut out, unfortunately. So this is now a key point in the movie where it's, in a way, the...
Second act turn?
Well, yeah, that they found her. They found her, and the tables are turned. Now the
chase is on.
The hunter is now the hunted.
Right.
Yeah, the tables have turned. But, of course, it's Gypsy Town, and you have all kinds of
characters.
One of the characters is Remy Franklin, who is Jeff Franklin, the exec producer's son. You'll see him later in a bar sequence. But this car is the smallest car you've ever seen. And when it drives, it literally sounds like a weed whacker. These are two-cylinder engines that they had there. That's like a weed whacker.
Is this an East German car? I think it was.
One was an East German car. They had all kinds of crazy vehicles, which is why it'd be so hard if this movie was set in America. We'd have to bring in our own cars and all that.
This is our Three Stooges gag coming up.
Yeah, you got to have a little gag where, you know, harmless situation of a clothing line. And so it's a combination of me and a stuntman. Now, this Vespa was not supposed to be wrecked, we found out later, because the transpo guys got it from my translator, Asia, and that Vespa was a gift to her from her father for her birthday. They never told her that we were going to wreck it. I wanted to kill those guys.
Yeah.
But that's what I call the Bulgarian surprise. So here's a crazy sequence where now they found her. The chase is on, really.
Right.
That now he's confronting her. Pavel is still looking around, but this is where it's all going to come to a head here.
Right. This is our big action scene.
Yes, and this is a sequence where it's a way, and I don't mind this in movies, is crashing a car without crashing a car. Because I know our line producer, Bob Perkins, was having a heart attack. Tic-tacs, you can't live without tic-tacs.
Right.
And he was terrified about actually flipping a car over. And you also have a stunt person on the car. So if you flip a car, it's actually incredibly dangerous if you have a person on it. So I told him, don't worry about it. We'll fake it. We'll do it with sound effects and cheesy editing. So that's what you get. You get a fake car crash.
Yeah, Bob was nervous this day.
Nervous Nelly, we called him.
Right.
And so now, of course, we see that William is trapped.
And
we have leaking gasoline. So it's a bad situation all around.
You know, this scene has always been in every draft of the script. You know that?
I wasn't aware of that.
Every single draft of the script, this scene has been in it.
Well, you got to blow up your lead character.
Right.
You got to try anyway.
Right.
And this is a way of showing that she's really quite a heartless character. Asshole American killed in a car accident. You know, and it's kind of what most Europeans think of us anyway, so it's a little metaphoric here. I beg of you. So he's begging her, and the begging line will come into play later. So now this is just a way, stylistically, to extend the fact, yes, of course, the car would have blown up already. I know that. I'm not a moron. But, you know, we want to kind of fool around with the suspense aspects of it. And fire looks cool in slow motion anyway. That it would play in slow motion up until the explosion. We need to drag the sequence out to and expand time.
Vasco, boom, boom.
Yeah, so, of course, now Jackie has come back to save the day. And he's very grateful. He's confused. He doesn't know what's happening. Yes, and coming up here is the work of a little guy named Vasco Boom Boom.
The happiest man alive.
Yes, never had a bad day in his life. Is very disappointed in you if you won't let him blow up the entire world. So I said, okay, Vasco, you get to blow this car. And obviously a car this small wouldn't even blow up that big. Of course, you hear your dog barking there because a big boom boom happened. So now we have the apparent demise of Jackie. She gave her life saving Williams, because she couldn't run away as fast.
And this is the point where William realizes what he lost, and it takes Yegor to tell him.
It's a little bit of a turn, because you have to, if you have a character who's an asshole at the beginning of the movie, You have to take them in some form of an arc. Otherwise, why follow that character? And
there's
your dog, Dave. Tell your dog story.
This dog was absolutely hairless when I saw him. He was sick and dying,
Dave adopted him.
I took him to the. I drove the transpo department crazy because I made him take the dog to the vet every day and get his shots. And he's now alive and well, living in Arizona. So
he is.
Oh yeah, he's fat and happy.
You're kidding?
No, George took him.
How did he get to Arizona?
George took him.
The production designer.
Yeah, George Costello.
Great, because that was the cutest dog. He humped my leg every day that he saw me.
Right.
He got better and better and better, so you really did a nice thing for that dog. Now watch him bite you when you see him. Now, this is Ryko. He is the stunt coordinator. And again, if you're going to have a stunt sequence, this whole bar is full of stuntmen. There's nothing but stuntmen in this bar. There's me and the stuntmen. And again, we had one day to film this entire sequence. So we had to just do it.
You know what I liked about this? You wanted a barroom brawl. You didn't want any martial arts moves.
Just a rough, because you know you see movies and it's hit,
slick.
hit. You know, everyone can do flips and spins. I wanted like a 1960s, just a fight in a bar, because most fights aren't choreographed. They're rough and they're crude, and you know, this is kind of close. That's Joel. He's the assistant director, the guy who almost hit me with a baseball.
No one grunts like Bruce. Nobody.
Now, Mel was having a heart attack this day, too, because I was getting hit on the head with things, broken bottles.
Right.
And I'm sweating, of course, like a maniac.
Right.
And this is going to be, this is Remy Franklin, this is Jeff's son again, who, you know, has kind of the acting bug, and he's a good kid, and he's really game for this. So he had to break several things on my head here. Melanie's having a heart attack. What I like is you can see the sweat just fly off my face as the guy spins my head around. So now he's got to learn, if he wants to win this bar fight, he's got to fight dirty.
If he wants to survive.
So really, William has been getting the crap out of him, the crap beat out of him first, and now Yegor takes over here. Where if it was Yegor in this bar fight, he would have fought dirty from the beginning. But William doesn't really get that. Now he does. Now, you know, grabbing a man's nuts, I told the stunt guy, I said, I'm not going to grab your dick. I'm not going to do it. So you better wear a cup. So he wore a cup that day so I could just grab his cup. I said, I'm not grabbing your manhood.
There you go with the slat.
Yeah, now this is fun. We chose Remy to bite his ear off.
Shades of Mike Tyson.
What that was is Melanie folded his ear back and covered it over and built another ear straight out that I could bite off. But I had to be careful because if I bit too far into the ear, you would actually get to his real ear. So I was a little afraid I was going to bite part of his real ear off. And of course, here's Joel. His hair is usually in a tight ponytail, and when he takes it out, Joel Morales has this crazy hair, really, really tightly wound. And so he was a fun character. He just stepped in. He was happy to do it. Now, here's our third payoff of the guy with the finger. Just out of nowhere, you just got to break it.
Comedy's in pain.
Yes.
Every good gag comes in threes, Bruce.
I agree.
And it's the three different characters that do it to him. That's what I love.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, his finger's broken three times by three different people. By Yegor, Jackie, and finally by William.
Now, this is very different location.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of editing. You know, you can cut two different locations together. So now something is bad. This is where we wanted to establish that, you know, he is slowly melting down. This little charade isn't going to go forever.
Right, he's on borrowed time right now.
Yeah, he's on borrowed time, exactly right. But she thinks she's got him, but wait a minute. Not this time, says Jack. She's going to push that sucker over the bridge.
Jackie's the Energizer Buzzy.
Now, they had this
funny
cool canal that ran right through the heart of Sophia and had numerous bridges that went over it. So we just wanted to pick one that was higher up that could work well. So it's really in the middle of a city, but you never kind of know that. And Melanie designed, you know, this crazy. She had pumped out this, that the brain was floating in like a blue liquid. And Velimir is doing some really neat things with his hands there, the mime. His hands are going in different directions like these circuits are off.
Right. And she tosses her over the bridge.
Yes. Jackie. Now, I love dummies. I always have, I always will. And this is just a good dummy.
Yeah, a good dummy fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Slow down just a little bit so it doesn't look too cheesy. And now we're sort of gearing up toward our end sequence.
It's where the final push.
Final showdown. There's nobody else in the way. They know she's here. It's just a matter of time before he catches her. She's hiding her knife there, the ever-present knife. Now, this is where she's sort of trapped, but she gets an idea here. An idea that maybe she can go down there. Now, that little reaction shot I actually stole from another scene. just before she dropped the lighter and lit me on fire with the car. It's just she cocks her head a little bit, and we wanted to sell the fact that she was thinking about that. So it seemed to work okay.
This is a nice shot.
This was obviously, you know, lit by David Wirth, and he's a very simple director of photography. So he just thought, let's just put a big bright light up above, you know, symbolizing the, you know, the outside light.
And characters are going down into hell.
Yeah, this thing was put on a cool little pivot there. It was the second unit camera guy, Tony, really nice guy, put it on a tripod where we could pivot the camera around at 360 degrees. So now we're back in the tunnel. The idea here is to sort of pay off the fact that we've been here before, the fact that we know it now has a much different connotation, that when he was here before, he was a wealthy, successful businessman who was taking advantage of these guys, and now he's basically...
Well, he's gone through a change.
A major change. He's a freak.
He's a freak, but he's gotten his humanity back in a way.
Well, hopefully. He's got to deal with her first.
Right.
So this was sort of fun, just shooting in these crazy tunnels. This sequence was filmed with... There was a cart. They just had a cart that would haul cables and equipment, and so we put Sasha, the Steadicam guy... It's Sasha. He was always disappointed, too. I'd say, Sasha, how was it? He'd go... Not so good. And he was always very upset with me.
Right.
And sometimes, and if he liked it, he'd go, it's okay. It's okay. Let's go again. And so now, of course, you know, you got to try and turn the tables where you can here. We're introducing a lighting effect here. The lighting effect is chains, mainly because they're now near a water source. So you'll hear and see... basically a water source that you'll understand where it's coming from shortly. Now, this sequence here was filmed in the old television studios. It's a massive soundstage that they used, I'm sure, in the 50s and 60s under communism, and it was left abandoned. And for legal reasons, we couldn't get in there during the week, so we snuck in on a Saturday and filmed here. And it had these just big open areas like this that you could be way far away. This is all one soundstage. It's like a big old Hollywood soundstage that looked like a portion of the sewer. So we matched the same lighting effect. This was also in that same set, only much further above. This set had catwalks and catwalks and catwalks. And so we went to all these different areas.
This wasn't scripted. You found this and did this.
We found this and added it. But we knew we had to have a chase, a confrontation. We knew it had to have a come to a head and have our water pay off, which comes up right here.
I like the height.
And I'll tell you, I think these effects guys did a great job. Because when I first saw this, you know, you're filming with her looking down at a blue screen. Just a blue screen. There's nothing down there.
I love this right here.
And that, well, that was a little bit of a silent movie bit here.
It was great.
There's a little bit more of it here.
Right.
Because it really is sort of a silent movie in the way it's played out. She's got her knife, but watch out. And so they added this lovely, rippling, dark, oily water down below. And I was... pleasantly surprised. I didn't really know what would come out of that. You never know until it's finally composited and put together. Now, these strange manhole things, these were everywhere in Bulgaria.
Everywhere.
We never knew where they went down to, but we just grabbed a portable one and put it here on our back lot and figured that was a good connection to something horrible happening down below. And, of course, now they have their final standoff where now it's Tatoya begging for help and... when William begged, she didn't help him, but when she begs, apparently...
He's a decent man.
He's going to help her, and she appreciates that. And? But what's fun about this is that basically, he just wanted the ring back.
Actually,
they both want it back. So now we have the ring finally coming back home, back to William, where we hope it belongs.
And
now you just
got
to kill her. This
right.
was also a really nice composite shot that the guys did, the effects guys, because... that wide shot was just a bare, open, concrete stage that was quite ugly and quite unremarkable.
And now he's starting to melt down.
Yeah, now they got to get back to the doctor. Now, there's no more fooling around. His scar is getting worse, he's bleeding a little more. They got to get out of there.
And
it's funny, in the sequence coming up where we filmed on the canals, there's a shot coming up right here. Where I step out, in an earlier take, there was a rat that came running out just before I came out, right behind me, just after I came out.
Right.
Came out the wall, ran right up the wall there. And this canal, Ted and I called it...
filthy.
Well, we called it Shit Wipe Alley, because every homeless person from Sofia would go down there and take care of their business. So we had to kind of clean it up before we filmed in there.
Disgusting.
And so now here we have the scientists working madly to solve the problem and finally cracking it. finally cracking the code, just when everyone's dying, just when everything is finally coming to a head, he's busted it. He's got it.
Has his vodka.
Yep. And the vodka, by the way, you could buy in Bulgaria on a Sunday morning at 9 a.m. at just about any store for about $4. So watch out.
This right here is my favorite moment in the movie.
Well, you know, you could have your silly movie moments and all that, but I think you and I agree, David. You got to have redemptive elements in your characters, right. A reason why people. And now she's low. She's got mobility 2%. I mean, she's on the downward slope. And we put like a Coca-Cola leaking out of her head, so you'll hear this like gluck, 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 that her vital fluids are going fast. Because I think I'm also a huge fan of reconciliation. These two had a terrible marriage at the beginning. They hated each other.
Right.
And it's a chance for them to finally come back on that he's a monster. Here's the transition is this. At the beginning, he's a normal-looking man on the outside, but he's a monster on the inside, really. And by the end of the movie, he looks like a monster on the outside, but on the inside, he's a normal man again.
He's gotten his humanity back.
And it took this bizarre set of circumstances to bring this man around.
Right. He's crossed the emotional bridge.
And what's funny is acting out a scene not only with another man, but with a pantomime, a man who doesn't even
speak
English.
That's the twist that was great on it. But, that's the thing I loved.
But it's very strange to do a sort of a love scene with a man in a mask, and it's supposed to be your wife.
Was that Ted's bit there with the weight?
No, I told him to play the weight.
It was great. I thought it was great.
Because he goes, this battery's so heavy. Right. And when we'll play the weight, play it like it's heavy. You know, Pavel doesn't have to be, you know.
There's a great gag coming up with you two did too here.
Clear.
Makes me laugh.
Like Ted, of course, he's the EMT here. Clear.
Just makes me laugh.
And this is what I like working about with Ted. He's
you.
It takes about 2 seconds for Ted to come up with something.
First, it's you.
So I'm getting shocked. Then I tell him to stop. Now he's getting shocked. Now we're all getting shocked.
I'm getting shocked watching it.
But it worked.
Right.
It worked. And this is where Velimir is really a good mime. You see on that wider shot, like his leg goes up and his arm is having these spastic motions and. It's not easy stuff. This guy probably had a headache, you know, like you wouldn't believe at the end of every day because he would have to hold in positions and do slight little jerky movements, and he was just terrific with that. And, of course, now I got to do a love scene with the guy.
Yeah. Well, this, Bruce, was you have to say goodbye. And it works.
But fortunately, they reconcile before it happens. They can finally say that they love each other.
Right.
And I like that, even in the ridiculous nature of the movie, that true love.
And the ring goes back where it belongs.
Right. Now this is where the ring belongs. Back on them. Everything's okay now. I wanted you to have that. And so the audience is, they're not really sure how to take this scene.
Yeah, it strikes them a little odd. They don't know what to do here.
Yeah, they're like, well, I was laughing a second ago. What's going on here?
And then... Here we
and I like this. You know, this was Velimir's idea to sort of reach up and touch me. I didn't really expect that he would do that. And so it was kind of a weird thing. Now this is just a slow death of the robot. The last little servo sound, George and I pitched it at the end, so it went... So even the servos die. And, of course, the final flashback shows them in happier times. And now, of course, even William's dead. So William's dead, Jackie's dead, Tatoya's dead... Everybody's dead. There's a lot of death in this movie. There's a lot of death of the lead characters. Do you realize that William dies twice?
Yes. And
of course, this is also in honor of Scott Spiegel. It's the mechanic who's, you know, wiping his eyes, but by the time he's done, he's put oil all over his face. The usual. And Ted doing his subtle performance. Now, this canal was just, it was crazy. And Melanie Tooker, who did all the makeup effects and stuff, she... Between her and Gary Jones, they sort of worked together. They had to create... I said, this dummy's got to float. So, I don't know. We don't want this thing to sink in this canal. It's got to float or it's not going to work. We also had to keep our eye on the rain.
Right.
Because if there wasn't enough rain, that canal wasn't going to flow.
Right.
When we first got there, it was flowing great.
Right.
Then we didn't get much rain because when I got there, David, in May to do work on Josh's movie, it was raining.
Right.
So we were fortunate that it had just enough water to keep going here.
It's pretty dry summer.
And so the shtick here is I just told Ted, you'll see behind him, there's 3, 4, 5, 6 things behind him. I said, look, Ted, just go have fun with each of these things. You're just trying to get this body back. And So we sort of selected. So of course, an idiot, he's trying to stop it by throwing stuff at it. Now watch this shoe very carefully. See how it goes right by the camera? It spun by, and some water from the canal came out of the shoe and into our Steadicam operator's mouth. And so we, good Lord, you know, they hosed him out and he swallowed water.
Didn't we have like five or six PAs chase that?
Every time that dummy just took off. I mean, when it hit that low slope, that dummy was gone. So as soon as I called cut, yeah, there were like four PAs running at the top of their, you know,
full speed trying to catch it.
Trying to get it back. We almost lost it a couple of times. It could have washed up in the Black Sea, I think. Now this was Stacy brought this up. It was his goal. He thought it would be great that this guy wants a Nobel Prize. And so Stacy and I concocted this last sequence where, great, come in here, get the lab ready, but while you're getting the lab ready, let's hear your acceptance speech, which is why we made it into an auditorium sound at the end with the applause, that he actually did, yeah, in fact, get his award. Meanwhile, back in the States, at his wealthy estate, and the exterior of that building was, I think it was a government building.
It was a NATO mansion.
Like if Colin Powell visited, that's where he would stay.
Right.
And it was really an amazing place, but we only needed the outside. The inside wasn't really working
for us.
No,
it wasn't working for us.
Now the idea is he's repaired.
Stalin would stay there too,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, not Putin's wife. So here is later, we're back home, everything's fine, he's sort of healed, he's the monster who's healed a little bit. And life is beginning again. He's made peace with Yegor. We see a little bit of that scar there.
He's a better man now.
And now, of course, earlier in the film, Jackie, his wife, hinted that she wished she could get a whole new body and start all over again. So her wishes come true in Tatoya.
And Tatoya has gotten her wish because she's now married.
Yes, indeed. And so this was a case where Tamara Gorski, of course, is sort of acting like Jackie. She's not the creepy...
I love the Morticia look.
Yeah. Well, instead of, the blonde wig, what we did is we tried to imitate a black wig that looked like the blonde wig.
Right.
And now, of course, the final payoff with the ring. Everything's fine. Everyone's happy. They both have the ring. So, final payoff here. I'll drive. And, of course, Yegor gets his last little line in. And they go off happily ever after. And now at the end here, this was a chance for Ted Raimi to do the full rap. He said he wanted to do this rap and he wanted to write it. So we were like, yeah, great, write the rap. So he wrote this ridiculous rap that's pretty fun to listen to. He's making strange pop culture references and some Russian things. And it's very bizarre. I think he did a really good job with it. And Joe LaDuca, which, of course, we were sort of remiss in mentioning him, who did the score for this, did not only a really great score where he got like a Russian choral group to do a couple of pieces from it, he also hired like a Bulgarian violinist to do the strange sound for Tatoya's theme. It had to be this very haunting, strange violin that the average violinist actually couldn't do. So we brought those special things in, and then Joe also helped Ted concoct this rap by Ted Rhyme Throwa Raimi. So, and obviously the credits of all the various people who worked on it, you'll see all the Bulgarians who worked on it. It was really a 98% Bulgarian crew,
right?
With Americans in some of the key positions. But Dave, would you say it was a good experience overall?
It was great. It was just great. They worked hard. They were on board. You know, they liked the movie, they had fun making it,
yeah.
And we had fun working with them.
And after all this time, David, after roughly 18 years of trying to get this film made, it finally got done.
Yes, it did, Bruce.
So congratulations, David.
Congratulations to you, Mr. Campbell.
And what are we going to do 18 years from now? The sequel, Woman with the Screaming Brain.
An excellent idea.
Hey.
I agree.
Let's get writing now, Dave, shall
okay.
we? Got any ideas?
Yeah, a few.
What do you think? I'm only going to be in the first 10 minutes.
We know that.
Because you can't afford me for the rest of it.
I know.
This is Jeff Franklin's company, Freshwater Entertainment. Call them for financing right now.
Okay, anybody. Call them today.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you, Ramon.
Rolling with Cadillacs in a Bulldog. More or less with a mile, my rhymes into a pile. Never crack a smile on a while, so evil vertex churning with style. Punk, you're stuck in the Kroger food aisle. Born Less with a Mile. But, oh, damn it.